ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of Politics Now. And sometimes it can be hard to cut through all the noise from the Canberra bubble. But on the Politics Now podcast, bursting it wide open is our core business. I'm joined by the brightest minds at the ABC to break down the poly speak and have a chat about what's actually going on behind the scenes. It's called Politics Now, and you can find it on ABC Listen.
What would you do to live to 100? How much would you spend to make the dream of a long life a reality? For many of us, it seems like the answer is a lot. But what if somewhere between that promise and the price tag, something doesn't add up? This is the first episode of a special two-part series by Background Briefing. This is Beef, the battle for the blue zones. I'm Josh Robertson. The reporter on this story is Madison Connaughton. Hi, Madison.
Hey, Josh. The tables have turned.
They have. Last week you were talking to me about my story. It's my turn to listen to your story. Now, I've only heard a little bit about this one in passing, and it sounds fascinating. So where do we start?
Okay, so I'm going to ask you to do me a favour. I want you to come on a little trip with me.
Oh, fantastic. Where are we going?
We are going to a Greek island. Is that okay?
Please take me there.
So let's set the scene. Electric blue water, idyllic beaches, green hills dotted with those traditional, you know, the whitewashed Greek homes. This is Ikaria. It's a rocky outcrop that's home to about 8,000 people. It's just a speck in the Mediterranean.
It sounds magic.
It's beautiful. And it's just the start of the summer season around this time, so the island's starting to come to life with visitors from all around the world.
Where are you from?
From Italy.
Sweden.
Australia. Sydney.
From the Netherlands.
Mother Netherlands.
Yeah.
And they're coming to spend their days here like the locals do, you know, relaxing, eating beautiful Greek food, hanging out with friends and family. But this isn't just any holiday spot. There's something special about Ikaria. This is the only Greek island that has the auspicious title of being a blue zone.
A blue zone?
Do you know about these, the blue zones?
No. What is a blue zone?
They're like these mysterious places around the world where people live to 100 years or more at incredible rates.
Mm.
Like Ikaria has been called an enchanted island of centenarians.
The fountain of youth.
Kind of. The idea is more that there's something about the way that these people live in places like Ikaria that helps them cheat death longer than the rest of us.
Every beach we've been to, there's 80-year-olds doing laps, and yeah, it's wild.
Tourists on this island marvel at its blue zone's lifestyle.
Everything that we see, we're like, we understand why people live till 100.
And many of them actually know it's a blue zone because this whole concept has absolutely blown up over the last few years. There's been this big Netflix series, all these articles, news stories.
I had read the book long before stumbling across Ikaria, so yeah, definitely knew about it.
Right, so we have Ikaria. Are there other blue zones?
Yes, but there's only 5 of them. So there are 2 other islands, Sardinia in Italy and Okinawa in Japan. There's also a small town in California called Loma Linda, which is about an hour from Los Angeles.
Okay.
And the 5th blue zone is the Nicoya Peninsula in Costa Rica. But over the past 2 decades, this whole multi-million dollar industry has sprung up around blue zones. There are blue zones cookbooks, wellness retreats, tons of blue zones products, all of them spruiking this blue zones lifestyle. It's a serious business. And the promise of it all essentially is, we'll teach you how to live like the people in the blue zones. And if you do that, you too can live to 100 or more without even trying.
All right, so basically my lifestyle determines my death style. You know, Metallica said that. Is that where they got the idea?
I'm sorry, Josh. I don't think it's from that. But this idea that the blue zones are like really special places, there are a lot of academic experts backing this in.
Okay.
Except for this one guy.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. On the other side of the world from beautiful Ikaria, there's a man sitting in a dim, fluorescently lit library in Canberra. And he's about to start a beef. He's about to ask, are the blue zones bullshit?
Okay, so who is this guy?
This guy is Saul Newman, and when we meet him, he's just graduated.
I had finished a doctorate in medical science at the ANU and had moved into plant science.
He's working during the day as a data scientist at CSIRO, but in his spare time, he has kind of an interesting hobby, which is that he likes to try and debunk scientific research for fun.
I'm an odd bod. I mean, really, in the library thinking about things. Either in the library or running, basically.
This is what you do in your spare time?
Sadly, yes.
Okay, I think we have the picture.
That's a heck of a thing to do in your spare time.
I don't want to give the wrong impression of Saul. He's kind of like the professor at uni whose classes you actually like going to, you know, like long hair, big beard, cultural references from this century. But he's a stickler for good science.
And, you know, along the way I had expressed this interest in the evolution of aging.
And one day a friend of his from uni says, hey, Saul, you should have a look at this paper. Now, this paper was about whether there's a limit on how long humans can possibly live. So Saul being Saul says, sure, I'll take a look. Why not?
They immediately saw that this paper was a shambles, like really dramatically filled with errors.
And this is like a red rag to a bull for Saul. So he starts looking deeper into the places where people are reportedly living these extraordinarily long lives, including some of the blue zones.
I tugged at this thread and discovered this shocking level of problems in this data. There are some extraordinary, unexplained issues. Nobody before me seemed to have any qualms about the blue zones. You know, why did nobody notice this for 20 years?
What's he saying?
A few things, including this truly crazy story from Japan.
Japan has a sort of celebration of old people and national respect for the aged day.
In 2010, on this day, officials want to pay respect to Tokyo's oldest man. But strangely, they get repeatedly rebuffed by his family.
The police were understandably sort of curious, came around, opened the door and found out that he is laying in bed because he is essentially a mummy inside the family apartment.
Oh, my God. Okay. How long had he been dead?
For decades. Oh. And his family had been collecting his pension.
Oh, dear.
I know. After this, the Japanese government started looking at its own pension records. Hmm. Do you want to guess how many 100-year-olds were missing from its records?
A lot?
The answer was 82%. Now, to put that in context, that is 230-some thousand people.
That is a lot of missing 100-year-olds. And this is Japan. There's a blue zone in Japan, right?
Yeah, there is, in Okinawa. Mm. Saul looks at Greece next, and he finds there that in 2010, the government there started looking at its pension records too.
72% of Greek centenarians, at least, were dead.
Dead? How had no one clocked that?
Saul says it was a mix of poor record keeping and people telling the government that their parents or grandparents were still alive so they could claim a pension. And when Saul looks at other public data about life expectancy in places like Ikaria or Sardinia in Italy, he finds that
they're not even remarkable locally, let alone globally.
He also finds things that raise an eyebrow for him in other blue zones, in Costa Rica and Loma Linda in California.
I mean, it's not surprising. If you go to the place, there are 2 8-lane freeways and a line of dusty hills and a Costco, and that's supposed to be the fountain of youth.
And Saul's like, wait, what's the point of pouring money and time into studying the secrets of these people and their lifestyles if it's not even clear these places are remarkable? Between the pension fraud, spotty data, and the bad record keeping, Saul is forming a provocative hypothesis that most of these really old people, including in the Blue Zones, are just errors, not miracles.
They were all from poor regions with bad record keeping, or poor regions with high poverty rates, or poor regions with high rates of old age poverty, low numbers of 90-year-olds, and extraordinary rates of pension fraud.
And so he does what academics do. He writes up a paper, but he gives it a spicy title.
Ooh.
He calls it Super Centenarian and Remarkable Age Records Exhibit Patterns Indicative of Clerical Errors and Pension Fraud.
Ooh, okay. Yes.
Yeah, sorry. I did say academic spicy, so it's not exactly. But anyway, what he does is he puts this paper up on something called a preprint server, which is basically like a bloggy sort of website that academics use all the time. They can post their work before it's gone through the whole peer review process. And at first, nothing happens.
Nobody cared. I mean, I barely cared. I was just like, look, I think this is interesting. I'll stick it out there and I'll go back to my job in plant science because that's what I really should be doing.
But then the paper goes unexpectedly viral. So within the first couple of weeks, it has 120,000 views and thousands of downloads, which, just to tell you, Josh, for academia, that's big numbers.
Yeah, I know several academics who would be going to great lengths to get such attention.
Yeah, and Saul's inbox is filling up, but it's not good.
I was absolutely hated. Like, really absolutely hated.
He's getting a lot of angry emails from other academics defending their work and the work of their peers. He's actually getting into, like, fights in the comment sections of obscure data blogs. He has never experienced something like this before. And according to Saul, some of his critics, they wanted to take things even further.
People have been calling my boss asking me to be fired and sending emails to my boss asking me to be fired. I was working plant science at the time, and my very tolerant boss was like, why am I getting emails about this instead of wheat phenology?
Whoa. Okay, fired over a paper. So he's really put the cat amongst the pigeons here.
But it's interesting, because instead of backing away from all of this, Saul actually runs towards it. So the people that he's made angry here are mostly demographers. And Saul isn't one of them. But he decides to go for this really competitive demography job at the University of Oxford. And he gets it.
I was hired into a position at the Leverhulme Centre for Demographic Science.
That sounds prestigious.
It is. But once Saul gets to Oxford, things don't calm down at all. Mm. Like, one Australian academic told me they got a call from an Oxford professor who was saying to them, like, who the hell's this Saul Newman? Why is he criticizing people in demography? And why is he coming to Oxford?
It's very difficult, obviously. I enjoyed, you know, ignoring it and going to the library. Mm. But it's not a comfortable position to be in.
Yeah, I mean, you don't always make friends, do you, as an iconoclast?
He's kind of thinking, what am I doing this for?
I had been sort of fighting this feeling of depression of getting nowhere in this field, that I'd given away a perfectly good career to pursue.
But then one day,
someone rings me while I'm cycling in traffic.
And he says to Saul, I'm a Cambridge academic and you've won this thing.
But you cannot tell anybody. And I'm like, what is this?
He's calling Saul to tell him he'd won an Ig Nobel Prize.
An Ig Nobel Prize.
An Ig Nobel Prize is kind of a tongue-in-cheek award that's given out in the scientific community. And the kind of thinking of it is it's something that will first make people laugh and then make them think.
My reaction was, this is glorious. I immediately thought of this lady who collected snot from whales. you know, she had got this drone with a little agar plate and flown it over Wales to pick up the sneeze.
And she'd won this.
I'm like, I'm in the best club. This is fantastic.
Saul travels to MIT for the awards ceremony for the Ig Nobels.
The Ig Nobel Demography Prize is awarded to Saul Justin Newman for detective work to discover that many of the people famous for having the longest lives lived in places that had lousy birth and death record keeping.
Saul comes out, I think this is delightful, with birthday balloons that say 122 on them.
Well played.
Yeah. So he's up on stage, big smile on his face, and he's handed his award by an actual Nobel Prize winning chemist. And then Saul reads his acceptance speech. He's written a poem.
So the secret, it seems, to live out your dreams and make sure you keep living, not dying, is to move where birth certificates are rare. Teach your kids pension fraud and start lying.
So what does he do with the Ig Nobel? Does he head back to Oxford?
Yeah, he heads back to the UK, but there's this influx of media coverage about him.
So he goes viral again.
He does. There are a bunch of headlines that declare Saul has debunked the Blue Zones, which is interesting because if you actually read his paper, it's more about the unreliability of the data that's used in this whole field of extreme age research. The Blue Zones are just one example that he deploys. But it's the one that grabs all the media attention.
Saul Justin Newman.
Saul Justin Newman has busted the Blue Zone myth.
Some Blue Zones researchers see all of this and basically decide to get the band back together to publicly rebuke Saul. They publish an open letter defending the work they did to validate the ages of the centenarians in the Blue Zones, although they don't mention Loma Linda. And they call Saul's work academically misleading and deeply flawed.
Wow.
This pushback, it does seem to blunt Saul's momentum a little bit. I mean, even some of the people who know him and support him, they decide to stay quiet.
I remember thinking that this was interesting, but I also remember thinking, this is dangerous.
This is Heather Booth. I'm meeting her for a tea in her office at the Australian National University, where she's an emeritus professor of demography. This is where she first met Saul.
I had never questioned, really. You just accept things, you know? And then Saul comes along and he says, well, you know, this doesn't add up.
Heather's a pretty towering figure in this field. She's worked all over the world. And I get the sense that, like Saul, she doesn't really mind standing out. Like, when I go to meet her, she says, I'm in a rush. I've got to go and learn all of my lines for this student film that I'm starring in tomorrow.
Okay, so she's not shy.
No, not at all. She's definitely a big personality. The thing is, though, when it comes to Saul's work, she's never talked about it before, at least publicly.
Because I could also be tarred with the brush that says that I'm a lunatic as well. I mean, not a lunatic, but, you know, out there.
But Heather says she doesn't think Saul is out there at all.
I think he's eminently sensible. I think, you know, he's got a mind, a brain. He doesn't accept the status quo unless he's checked it out, and he also thinks that that's right.
She told me that looking back on this, she regrets not working with Saul at the time.
I just didn't think that sticking my neck out against all these eminent people was quite the thing to do. I mean, Saul was in a different field, remember. I am a demographer and they're demographers.
And as we're talking, Heather gets up and she walks across her office to a bookshelf and grabs this really chunky tome for me. She brings it back to the table. It's the book on extreme age validation, written by a whole bunch of those eminent people. She says these academics meet up every year. They all use the same techniques. And I get the impression it's pretty tight-knit. But Heather wonders why that means it should be so closed off to Saul's ideas.
If you have somebody who has an open mind, you would welcome some discussion about it. Because to me, the issues that he's raised seem perfectly sensible.
And Heather thinks she knows why that hasn't happened.
This group that I was on the periphery of is a club. Closed ranks. Don't want to know. Vested interests. Too much at stake. Who on earth is going to admit that they've published a whole book of rubbish? If it is. You see what I mean?
And I did ask her, you know, what is your opinion on all this Blue Zone stuff? And she said,
I don't think there's anything magic whatsoever about Blue Zones. There might have been some genetic reasons why some people lived longer, but there's probably a lot more reasons why the data are in error.
Saul never used the term club that Heather did, but he does feel like he's coming up against something he just does not understand. Like the academic paper that he wrote, he's still trying to get it published. And he's been going back and forth on it with a journal for more than 2 years now. I mean, remember, he first put it up on that preprint server back in 2019.
Saul Newman published his piece in a place that my 11-year-old grandson could publish it. So we couldn't take it seriously.
This is J. Olshansky. He's an emeritus professor at the University of Illinois, Chicago. He's a pretty major longevity researcher, and he's not a fan of Saul's paper.
It wasn't science. Some of the claims that were being made were just patently false. And when I did the review, I basically said, yeah, well, you know, that's not true, and that's not true, and that's not true.
When I get in touch with Jay, he's actually on a yacht near Italy's Amalfi Coast and tells me that he's just presented at the Milan Longevity Conference.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's got to be good for his longevity, surely.
It cannot hurt. But as Jay bobs on my screen, a world away from drizzly Sydney, he tells me he actually peer-reviewed a version of Saul's paper a few years ago, and he rejected it.
So he ended up putting it out in the only place he could, which was a place that had no peer reviewers.
He means the preprint server.
Yeah, exactly. When I asked Jay what his concerns are, he reels off a few. Like, remember those missing centenarians in Japan? Well, Jay said they didn't affect Okinawa's status as a blue zone. And Sardinia, that's another example. He said it's not fair for Saul to use island-wide life expectancy stats.
I don't think he quite understood that the blue zone in Sardinia is not all of Sardinia.
Jay tells me the blue zone's actually only a small corner of the island. And here, he says the researchers carefully checked the ages of centenarians using things like birth records and baptism records. They call this process validation.
The validation procedure led to 100% certainty that we knew exactly when these folks were born, when they died.
Wow, 100%. Okay, that's baseball bat stuff from academics. What does Saul think?
Well, not to get too in the weeds, but basically Saul's argument is by the time you get to people who are over 100 or 105, there are going to be a lot of errors, and those errors are almost impossible to detect.
Right. A stalemate then.
It kind of looks that way. But Jay says the reason he's so sure that Saul is wrong is because he spent the past year checking the numbers from three of the original blue zones, so Sardinia, Okinawa, and Nicoya, and he's managed to wrangle all the big blue zones researchers together onto an academic paper about it.
You know, there's a lot of egos involved, and a lot of these folks have worked on this for more than a quarter century. Yeah, it was not easy. I'll be honest with you, it was pretty difficult, but it worked. Everybody cooperated.
So they put all their differences aside and they're pushing back against Saul.
I do think that that's part of it. Like Jay told me, the time has come to debunk the debunkers. But it's interesting because as I'm talking to Jay, it becomes clear that something has changed since Saul entered the fray. See, since Saul's criticisms, this research group has actually come up with a new definition for blue zones.
Hang on. Haven't the blue zones been around for, like, decades?
Well, that's the thing. Jay told me that...
Historically, blue zones were not all evaluated the same way, right? They used different criteria. So I came in last year and I said, you know, we need to operationalize this process. You need to use one set of metrics only.
So now they're basing the blue zones on life expectancy at 70 and then survival from 70 to 100, comparing that to countries with the highest life expectancy.
Okay, hold up. That's very different to the well-known idea of what the blue zone is, right? Which is that people live to 100 in these areas.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's right. That's what the popular conception of the blue zones has been for decades. And I was pretty surprised because Jay told me that blue zones are no longer even about centenarians.
You don't need a count of the number of centenarians. It's completely irrelevant to what we did.
As Jay's talking me through this whole revalidation process, he mentions somebody else.
When we were out in Sardinia and Dan Buettner was there, he took us out to dinner. This is how you do research. You know, you go to these locales and you do work during the day and you eat pizza and drink wine at night.
Okay, so who is Dan Buettner?
Dan Buettner, more than anyone else, made the idea of blue zones take off. He first popularized the blue zones 20 years ago, writing about them for National Geographic. He's the host of that Netflix series, the one about the blue zones. I mean, he's basically the reason Ikaria is now a longevity mecca.
I find that the absolute best longevity hacks from the blue zones are the ones that not only extend your life, but they're also enjoyable.
Dan even started a company called Blue Zones LLC, and he's made a lot of money off this idea that blue zones hold the secret to a long and healthy life.
So he's Mr. Blue Zones.
Exactly. And Jay told me Dan Buettner is actually funding the launch of a new Blue Zones Research Institute.
We went to Dan. I mean, we asked him to fund it, and he agreed. So we actually have a commitment of funds. I can't go into detail on the number, but, you know, it's not trivial.
Does that create a potential conflict of interest for this Blue Zones Research Institute if they're being funded by the company that has a big stake in the idea?
I did ask Jay about this.
Obviously, Blue Zones, the company, has commercialized the idea of the blue zones. There's lots of things that they sell related to the idea. And you're running a scientific organization. I mean, did you consider the sort of potential conflicts there of taking funding from the company?